On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For years now, they've called Russell Simmons the CEO of hip-hop, and it doesn't take a finance major to see why. Def Jam Records was his baby, so were Run DMC, LL Cool J, Public Enemy, The Beastie Boys, Ludacris, Def Comedy, Chris Rock, Jamie Foxx, Eddie Murphy's comeback, and on and on. He's sold fashion and ideas and energy drinks and, most of all, the black urban attitude of hip-hop into the American mainstream. Now he's pausing for yoga and trying to rein in the kind of raw language that made his fortune and got Don Imus fired. Up next on Point, hip-hop guru Russell Simmons. Joining me now from New York is the co-founder of Def Jam Recordings, founder of Fat Fashions, producer of TV shows such as Def Comedy Jam, Def Poetry Jam, Run's House, and so much more. Russell Simmons has made hundreds of millions in the process. Businessweek magazine calls him the CEO of hip-hop, an entrepreneur, they say, who helped bring an urban sensibility with its bravado, its exaggerated desires, and its urgent longing for the good life to the American mainstream. His new book is Do You, 12 Laws to Access the Power in You to Achieve Happiness and Success. Russell Simmons, thanks very much for being here. Great to have you.
Oh, my God, that's a long introduction.
And here we are. You show.
Oh, my God.
You show.
I feel like I'm 300 years old.
Yeah, well, you know, you look at that list of everything you've started and done and put out there, and it must look like that sometimes. And I got to ask you right off the bat, I mean, here you are distilling a lifetime of lessons out of that and putting it out there for everybody to read. Oprah helped you name it, Do You, and we'll talk about that. And it flies right into this whole storm about hip-hop language and ho and bitch.
Yeah,
and all that. How do you feel about your lifetime wisdom hitting that?
I wrote a book about consciousness and love, connecting to that space, you know, that that higher you, that that state of nirvana or samadhi or Christ consciousness or the ball of love inside you and the unity that connects us all. And it's my life's work, and it's about the laws of attraction and about, you know, all of these things that people are interested in. And the next thing I know, I get pushed into the discussion on every interview, which was scheduled to talk about my book.
Mm-hmm.
All we can talk about is bitches and hoes.
Why do you think that is?
Can I say that on your radio station, by the way, bitches and hoes?
Yes. We're not looking to drive it home six ways to Sunday, but... But yes, we can say it. It's right out there in the public domain now, and very prominently.
Yeah.
Why do you think the conversation goes there instead of, you know, what you're looking at is sort of the deep lessons and personal compass settings?
It's all the same. I mean, I want each artist to have a personal responsibility. Each artist to say what's in their heart, and sometimes they say things and they paint pictures of society that we don't like. They're reflections of our truth. Sometimes truth that we don't want to see. And so people have pointed the fingers at the poets and the artists and societies forever. The artists never sat around while people were put in ovens or when innocent people are bombed or when we the poverty worldwide, all these things are things that you, when you do self-reflection, you see what is it that you're investing in. Because inside is that ball of light I was referring to, right?
Mm.
And so the truth comes out. A lot of artists try to connect to that. That's where their creativity comes from.
Mm-hmm.
So people don't like the artists. And I understand that these people, voices for voiceless people, are saying things that offend the mainstream. I'm sorry. I wish they, as a yogi, I wish they only said sweet, spiritual, and uplifting things. But in the end, it's all spiritual if it's truthful. And it's how do we digest our truth or not? So I'm a servant of hip-hop my whole life. I still am. You know, I have hip-hop summits, and all the artists seem to love to support their community. If you name an artist, any artist, I will tell you the name of their charity. And I think that they're very, very invested in giving back to their communities. But I'm not here to defend them. I'm here to get the best from them. And one thing that has come up lately, and I guess that's why I'm in the middle of this S-Storm. I can't say the other word, right?
No, no thanks.
Right. S-Storm. But I'm in the middle of the storm because I had an opinion that maybe we should not deliver these words, bitches and hoes, to mainstream radio.
And one more, the N-word.
That's a recommendation which... I made, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. and, the other, and the N-word as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought maybe if it, they weren't on public radio...
That is on commercial radio, on broadcast radio, you mean to say.
Yeah, if I could build a bridge between the activists and the pain, mostly African-American women and other women, and the some people believe the N-word represents self-hate. Today, I think, from the hip-hop community, it doesn't, but it doesn't matter what I think. It's just about getting records on the radio, that on mainstream radio, that don't offend the mainstream.
Mm.
Now, the content, I'm sorry, can't be touched. So if there's something we could do to build a bridge, that was my recommendation.
Mm.
But I'm not a young artist running the label.
Right, right.
They have to make a decision on their own. If they think it's something towards censorship that they don't want to approach, then I respect it. It's just a recommendation I made, and I'm hopeful that it'll help to ease the pain that people have and I'm not looking to soften up rap. I mean, this whole discussion about how gangster they are is good for their sales. It's not like they're getting hurt because you guys are afraid of them. But I think it's important that people do digest their words because they're so telling. The sexism and the racism and the homophobia and the violence that's in our society sometimes is reflected in our hip-hop music. Now, granted, there's many positive hip-hop artists who aren't discussed. The Alicia Keys and her Keep a Child Alive and all the work that's good in hip-hop, all the voters that Puffy registered and all the... I mean, every artist has done it. Africa, Jay-Z is bringing water. Nelly, For Sure, For Kids is special. The Ludacris Foundation is amazing. I run the Foundation for Ethnic Understanding, and we promote racial and religious dialogue, but I also run the Hip-Hop Summit, which I talked about, and... I run the Rush Philanthropic Art Foundation, and I run the Diamond Empowerment Fund out of my office. And our hip-hop community, Reverend Run's show, is a show about 5A students.
It's your brother, and Run as in Run DMC.
That's right.
Run,
and Reverend it's Run on MTV. The number one show on MTV is about love and family, and that's hip-hop. So they don't talk about that, but that's not relevant here today. Today, instead of my book, which I think is really a great contribution, and I, if I say so myself, because I didn't write It's Only God, it's only stuff that came from scripture. In other words, the Quran, the Torah, and the Bible, and the Yoga Sutras, and the Buddhist scripture all say the same thing. And my book is about that same thing, that there's a connection. But all of these good connections that hip-hop has made with society and what it's done to change race relations, there's nothing. When Run DMC got on MTV, there wasn't nobody black on there. But Michael Jackson, and his nose was broken, his hair was straight, so he was a different kind of black.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Run DMC broke down the door.
And this was your brother. The first band you really embraced with Def Jam Recordings. And
we had many bands, but the point is that Run DMC did knock some doors down. But the doors for the prejudice and the separation for young people were broken down when Run DMC got on MTV. And now you watch MTV, and again, his show, he's a reverend now, his five children are heroes. And they're A students and they're sweet kids, and his ministry is on television.
May I ask about, I mean, you dive right in talking with themes from the book about sutras and samadhi and bliss and the light within and that theme, that thread, and it's a huge one in this book, sort of remarkable for someone who we think of as the godfather of hip-hop. It's not what we expect to be behind that. Hip-hop, which has got so much, a whole range of emotions, we know, but so much anger in it from the beginning. When you began in the late 70s and early mid-80s sort of really pursuing this line, way back then, did you have this kind of vegan, meditative, yogi light going on? Or were you just one with that rougher hip-hop sensibility?
Well, you have to look at Ludacris and see that he just joined the record industry when I signed him at Def Jam. And they said he was a lot of things. But now he's a great light for the industry and for humanity. And he's only taken him a few years. It took me many years to make some changes, and I'm still struggling with that thing you said I started with. But Ludacris is a great example. Nelly is a great example of change. Jay-Z's first record I signed him was Ain't No Nigga. Mm. Oh, can I say that?
It said.
All right. That was his first record. Ain't No Nigga Like the One I Got. And Foxy Brown, he had a duet. It was on my Nutty Professor soundtrack. I produced that movie, and he had the hottest song on the soundtrack. That's how I signed him.
I want to try once more, Russell Simmons, on this where spirituality and hip-hop's edge meet in you personally. It can be pretty rough on the hip-hop edge. How does the Sweetness and Light piece fit together with that?
It's all God. I mean, you know, everybody's personal responsibility, which is what I keep saying, and truth is another thing I keep talking about. We want, if people are struggling, if people are living in a mindset of poverty, and it's expressed in a record, and it's whether it's, you know, real poverty or real abuse by the police or real people are operating from lack instead of abundance, and maybe it's really difficult to gain access. You know, there's a lot of sadness in this country that's overlooked. And so when the rappers speak out about some of those subjects, I'm always happy to hear it. And when the rappers speak about, you know, where is the love, and talk about not, you know, making the choices we make as a country, from our foreign policy to the lack of concern for the poor in this country, or, you know, in a very, when they speak about solutions, that's great. But when they're reflections of problems, that's just as great. It's all okay. The poets are supposed to have personal responsibility, and they're supposed to express what's in their heart. So I support that. I've been a servant of hip-hop from its beginning. I love Snoop Dogg as much as I love Alicia Keys. I love, they're all phenomenal artists. Well,
Business Week looks at you and your quite incredible corporate story. All the companies started and sold, and some still going on. Def Jam, 100 million plus. Fat Farm, 140, I don't know what it was, million. I mean, we're talking big money here. Corporate America has really taken to you for your ability to bring that hot hip-hop cultural theme and plug it into mainstream America. That's what they love in you. When they invest in Russell Simmons, are they investing in that? How do you see it? Bridge? Or how do you see yourself in that world? Why are you so popular there?
Well, I think that people want emotional attachments to this audience. And when they support my Rush Foundation, and many do support that foundation, or when they're involved in the Hip Hop Summit Action Network, and it's inspiring people, or any of these philanthropic or social, even semi-political actions.
But it's not just that. It's fashion and style and bling and everything that sells.
Yeah.
I mean,
but
drinks.
The Diamond Empowerment Fund is something that all of the jewelry business needs. We have now a green bracelet that's out. It's on all the celebrities. If you look on their wrist, you'll see this 1-carat raw diamond hanging from their wrist. And these green malachi beads. I want to sell these beads. I want to sell 1 million of these bracelets. And I want to fund this school in Africa. It needs $35 million. But I want to keep selling, not only them, but I want the whole industry to support an effort to give back to Africa. So the Diamond Empowerment Fund is funded right now by the Green Initiative my company, Simmons Jewelry, has. But the industry welcomes my participation because it makes good sense to build a better relationship not only with Africa, but with the diamond business. You want to see through a transparent diamond to an empowered African. You want to see through that diamond to something more worthwhile. You want diamonds to mean love. So we figure out a common sense approach to doing that and still help their bottom line. I hope I can do that for different businesses.
Business Week says they love you for a very different reason. They look at Russell Simmons and they say, this is a guy, they trust Simmons, you, to navigate the fine line between edgy and appalling in the hip-hop universe, authentic
appalling.
And
I don't
offensive.
Know they wrote that.
Yes, they did.
I'm not. Cadillac is a big sponsor of my book tour. Cadillac is a sponsor, and with the Cadillac, they like the success thing. Because my book, in the end, it's about love and consciousness, right? But then it's about the laws of attraction. So it's about making money. And, you know, I'm perceived as a guy who has a lot of toys, including a Cadillac. So they want to sell Cadillacs. And they do a lot of good work is why I like working with them. They do a lot of philanthropic and social work that matters to the people.
So, so
they
are you
employ a lot of people, and they have a really good programs for those people. So I'm happy. I could have chosen anybody, but I chose Cadillac. I hope that it means that they'll do better because they do better. When you get companies that do better for the people and they do better for their bottom line, that's the kind of model, business model, that I want to promote.
When you describe yourself as a yogi, and I know yoga's a big part of your life, you're a vegan, you got the vegetarian, strict vegan vegetarian thing going on there.
Lots I try of, not to eat anything that runs for me,
right,
but I do sometimes.
Right. Lots going on that front. That, as you describe it here, to take you to the kind of love consciousness, and then from there to attraction, that makes you attractive, and then that makes you successful. Is that what you're looking for in your yoga work, in your meditation, the next $100 million?
Well, let me tell you something. You wake up in the morning and decide on what you can give. Getting is receiving is giving inside out. It's always good to be part of a cycle of giving. The world's in perfect order. It's for our own peace that we give more, that we want to change the world to make it, quote unquote, better, so we can be peaceful. We all want those seconds of happiness. Some people think holding on to money or things is what makes you happy. I think giving it is what makes you happy. But money and giving is not really the issue here. The issue is your personal peace. As you know more, you do more. As you feel more empowered by helping others, it makes you strive to help others more. Selfish. It's all selfish. We want peace. The world's already in divine order. Our support for good action makes us peaceful, we think. It's written in all the scripture. It's in the Yoga Sutras for sure, but it's also in the Bible and the Quran and the Torah. It's not, you know, it's not new information here. So I'm sharing that truth as I experience it more, that giving is receiving and that being faithful is the key. And that being, you know, these things that are written over and over again, that your mama told you and the preacher told you and the prophet told you, that these things are true. Can I say it in such a way that rings a bell in you that maybe the reason we yogis chant the name of God over and over and over again like we're crazy is not because we can't spell God. It's because we're practicing remembering God. So that's what I just try to, you know, I try to say remember. Try to remember to remember. And then if you can, then, you know, it makes you a better servant, a greater giver or contributor. Then, of course, all those who are great contributors receive, you know. So, I mean, the most thing you can receive, I mean, the most useful thing you can receive is peace. But if it's money, then use that money wisely, because if you hold on to it or any of the toys that God gives you, it gets stagnant in you and you get sick. So I just recommend that be part of a cycle of giving. Learn to appreciate giving. Show up where you give your money. See the lives you affect. Know that that's your real benefit. The lives you affect in a positive way, or the more love or happiness you give, the more happiness or love you receive. And that's, you know, that's the science of the universe.
There's
the karmic laws are unbreakable.
The word from the CEO of hip-hop makes them peace and an awful lot of bank also in Russell Simmons' case. And he says in yours too, give and you shall receive. Sounds like the message right here. Russell Simmons, we've got a lot of listeners who would like to speak with you. I'd like to begin to turn to them. Do you mind?
I don't mind.
Good. Lori's calling from Malden, Massachusetts. Lori, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I love your show. I think that you're great. I think Russell Simmons is obviously a brilliant guy, well-read, studied a lot, but I believe that it smacks of hypocrisy. All this talk of love and peace is fantastic. Maybe he's just come to it later on, but the guy made millions promoting the thug life, the gangster life, violence, and peddling it to our kids. And you know what? I'm going to take my answer off the air, but I just really, I'm so happy that you've come to this now and you're spreading this now, but it really made me sick when I heard that you're recommending banning those three words, because after...
I'm not banning. Wait a minute.
No,
I have to stop you. No, you finish.
Right?
I'm sorry.
No. You're recommending.
No.
Saying take them off of broadcast radio.
I'm not offended by the words. I'm suggesting that those words come off daytime radio. In fact, when I was the chairman of Def Jam, I was the first one to ever beep a rap record. And I think beeping records for mainstream consumption is fine.
But what about Lori's point?
I was the one who went to the Senate and testified when we put stickers on records. I think
Can I just say one thing? Can I just
but
say
I don't thing? But I want to say to you, because you talked for a minute, I'm going to let you talk some more.
Okay.
That I recommend beeping words, not talking to artists at all. I don't think it's an artist should have to be part of a censorship process. But as a social and corporate responsibility, I think it's okay to deliver radio.
So write it, sing it, but beep it on daytime radio. Lori, what do you say?
I say beeping it is full of crap, because you can tell what those words are. It goes blah blah blah. You. Blah.
I agree.
You can absolutely tell what those words
That's
are.
That's true.
Do you
She's
think
right.
That a kid doesn't know what they are? Come on.
She's
let's
right.
Let's talk about.
She's right. You're right.
But Russell, she says, how can you talk about love and peace but have delivered up the thug life, the gangster life, which doesn't look
She's
like love
right
and peace?
She's right about the beeping thing.
Yeah.
They know what it is.
Take on her
My
bigger
My daughters
point.
Don't know what it is, by the way. They're young. They're 6 and 7 and 4, and they don't know.
They'll find
they don't
out.
Know what,
but
when you beep it, they don't know.
Take on her bigger
But mostly
point.
They
says, Russell,
change the
this,
words rather than beep them, because they don't like the words that sound so bad on the radio.
Yogi
but
Simmons,
anyway,
take on her big point. She says, how
content,
can you go for love and peace when you made your millions on this?
The content of rap music is going to be, many times it will be offensive. When you listen closely to the sad truth that comes out of these artists' mouths, it is many times offensive. But it is critical that this truth that we overlook come out. And I think those people, those Americans who live in those places and who have these opinions of us and of themselves, that we have to talk about it. And I think that when you listen to a sexist rap record, and if it rings a bell in you, look inside. A violent record. We do so much violence. We're such smart people that we walk away from our truth all day. And I say that, how many Iraqis are dead?
Lori, are you persuaded?
Does anybody know? No, I don't want to persuade. I'm asking a question.
Anywhere from, some people say 50,000, some have said hundreds of thousands. But
yeah,
no, 50,000 is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands.
Lori, what do you say?
Iraqis are dead.
Hundreds of thousands. Agree.
I think that poets are there, and painters and artists have always been there to paint a picture of society. And they've always been, and because they look inside, they see our contradiction, and they point their fingers at us. We get upset and point the fingers at them.
Russell Simmons, we hear it, and Lori hears it. I'd love to hear how it's going down with her. Lori.
I just think that I actually agree with the hundreds of thousands number, but I also support the right of artists to express themselves however they want. However, after viewing the documentary that was done by Byron, I forget his last name, but it was Beyond Beats, and he asked you point blank, he said, how do you support, you know, promoting this image of masculinity that's all about the violence and how tough you are and all that stuff, and you had no answer for him. And how about promoting?
I'm answering
some
you
of
now.
These
I'm a servant,
artists, Russell. How about promoting some of these underground hip hop artists that say we try to get heard by the labels? They won't hear us. They can't sell our records. And thank you very much,
Russell Simmons.
Well, I do a poetry show on HBO. Mm-hmm. Lots of good things come
Def
out of
Jam,
it.
Jam poetry. Yep.
I support all of the philanthropic and social and semi-political work that all of the artists do. I have a hip-hop summit that travel around the country. I produce Run's House and this TV show Brooklyn, which both are very, very inspiring stories and people. And I try to find things that I lift up that are from hip-hop that promote my personal belief that, you know, that rap can not only define problems or depict them, but change the world.
Do you ever have self-doubt about it? Do you ever ask yourself, though,
I have a financial literacy program that travels around the world. I support the police community programs that I can, as many as I can. I try to do what I think is good, and I try to get the artists to do what's good.
And with all that, do you ever question yourself? Do you ever wonder, did we get the right balance here, or did it throw off too much negativity in addition to the light?
There's not a discussion about Alicia Keys and her work. There's not a discussion about Wyclef and his work. There's not a discussion about the good work that Eminem has been doing, a lot of good work. There's not a discussion about Snoop Dogg's charity or nor is there discussion about Ludacris's work. So I try to help them do that. They're not interested in promoting that. But I try to help them with that. And that's what I do. I'm a servant of hip-hop. My brother's show is about 5A students and the best black family you've probably ever seen since Bill Cosby. I would argue that they're even sweeter kids than Bill Cosby's kids. They're certainly better students, and they're really, really, and this is a reality show. They're not acting. And they're on TV, and it's the biggest show on MTV, and I'm very proud of that.
Let me get another call before the break,
so
if I can.
So I do the best I can, but I do by example more than by judgment.
Yeah, Sharon from Quincy, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just want to thank you so much.
She's right, though. I'm sorry, ma'am. I didn't mean to over-talk you. The other woman. Mm-hmm.
Sharon, what do you say, Sharon?
Oh, no, I'm just an avid fan and have been since I was a teenager in middle school, and I carry a bag. The Run DMC Tougher Than Leather album, somebody made it into a bag for me, and I carry it everywhere I go, and people are like, oh, Run DMC, and it creates conversation, and there has to be conversation for there to be change, and I'm glad that you're on the show, and I'm grateful for everything that you do, and it's been just a lovely honor to be an observer, to be a lover of hip-hop, and to be an observer of your work.
There you go.
Wow.
Two thumbs up from Sharon. She's going to take it. She says it stirs the conversation and gets us talking. Russell Simmons, I wish you'd take us way back to when you were first getting into this. You were at NYU. You were reaching out, looking at these hip-hop bands in Harlem and Queens. Did you ever imagine that this would, in those days, that this would skip over all the, you know, race and ghetto lines and move into the American, the white American mainstream?
The intent was to support the artists. I loved the art form. I produced the music because I loved it, and it was always a labor of love. And today, still, I'm a servant of hip-hop. I don't see much difference from, you know, getting some new success story to happen at some level that people think is a high level or a tremendous success. It's all relative, because getting my first record on the radio was phenomenal. Hearing it the first time in a club was a great experience. So all of it's the same. It's all relative, and it really is all just a process, you know. It's just a journey, and it's been a very fun one.
Did you think white kids would get swept up in this culture at the beginning?
When you're focused, you don't think. When you're really enjoying the process, you don't need. When you're not focused on the result, you're enjoying the path, and you're focused on the path, lest you trip over it, trying to get somewhere that you know and missing the enjoyment of the process. I think that we're all living under these laws that I refer to in my book. Whether we like them or not, or whether we're conscious of them or not, they're in effect. So when we're good, when we're enjoying it, I mean, when we're doing what inspires us, which is it's the work itself. So when we have our head down on the path is when you enjoy it. And when you look to a goal, you get the goal. Of course, whenever you do get that toy, it's very sad, bad letdown. So enjoy the process, and I've enjoyed the process a great part of the time. Whenever I looked up, I was there was a lot of noise, and I missed the enjoyment. So I promote to everyone the truth that I try to remember, that I enjoyed getting my first record made a lot. That was a lot of fun. When the first records were played on mainstream radio, it was inspiring. But it wasn't itself the same. That wasn't as good as making the record. And then getting the paycheck was a lot less exciting than actually knowing that people were inspired outside of the core community.
It was great to hear
the
those.
The more people that loved it, the more I felt something. But doing it was always the most. Watching people love it was very good. But getting the result that you're referring to was of no use. That was actually, if I counted on it too much, it was really a downer.
Do you remember the first time that realization came to you? Oh, my gosh, this could not just be big right here, but nationally. Do you remember the moment when Russell Simmons had that insight?
I remember the moment when I heard Rockbox in the speaker in the studio when he turned it up loud. We were playing little toy speakers so we could make the sound a certain way. And then it was mixing, and we got it mixed, and we played it loud, Rockbox by Run DMC. And felt, well, all I could think was, wait till these niggas hear this. That's all I could think. Till they hear this. And that was a big crossover record you're referring to. And King of Rock, when I heard it on the speaker, or when when we would work it on the record with Steven Tyler and making Walk This Way, or making the record, thinking about how it's going to inspire people, all excited to give it, giving it to the radio, hearing it on the radio is good. Watching people respond is great.
We've got a little bit of that.
Getting
rock
paid
box.
Is nothing.
Well, it's 1984 rock box from Run DMC's first album, same name. And here you got that cross fertilization, the first big hip hop song to incorporate the electric guitar. 84 rock box. You hear it. Russell Simmons heard it way back then and started dreaming big. Dan's calling from Aiken, South Carolina. Dan, you're on the air with Russell Simmons.
Hi.
Hi. What do you know?
Well, I've got really 2 points for Mr. Simmons, neither one of which really requires a response or just kind of food for thought for him, I guess. He can answer them if he wants. First of all, I've heard all the philanthropic things that him and all of the hip-hop artists have done, and all of his religious views that he's spoken through this program. And, you know, like I said, this doesn't require an answer. First of all, I'd encourage him to read John 14:6 and to think about whether or not all the good things that you could do could even cancel out the first sin that you committed in your life.
What's John 14:6 say, Dan?
I am the way that Jesus saith unto them, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no man cometh unto the Father but by me.
Okay, and your second point?
And my second point is, he said earlier in the broadcast that their hip-hop artists are portraying a sector of life that sometimes people find unpleasant and people don't want to hear it and all those things. And he said also that people need to look inside when they're stirred up to do these bad things or whatever. And what I'll say is that I used to live the inner city lifestyle, and I know what it's like. It's a miserable life for the most part, and the life of crime and all the things that are portrayed are almost glamorized. And I think we need to look at responsibly as people whether or not when we sing about I got to go out and regulate on these punks or whatever like that, oh, I'm going to go hit a lick and pull a jack move and all that stuff like that, we need to look responsibly as to, are we encouraging people to do that? Yeah, it's already in their heart to do it. But when we sing about that, about laying the snitches in the ditches and all that other hip-hop type of stuff like that we hear about, are we encouraging people to do that when maybe they wouldn't have had that thought? I listened to hip-hop from the time I was a little kid.
Dan, we've got it. We appreciate your call very much, and we'll get to it. I want to get one more right here. Norman from Roanoke, Virginia.
I want to speak to Dan.
Okay.
Two things.
Yep.
Two things, Dan. One thing, quickly, I will say, that's a very good question. Does one cancel out the other, the reflection of the truth and echoing it so loud? But people who come from that poverty or that mindset, they, as Americans, they don't owe us a lot, but I do believe we owe them to change the conditions that create that kind of lyric. And you're right, it's not really making society better. But to the extent that we understand their plight, maybe the kids in Compton are speaking directly to the kids in Beverly Hills, and maybe they will make it better.
But if it's not, isn't that on your
shoulder?
Secondly,
about the religious thing, I want to speak to it, because when Jesus said about Christ consciousness, he was referring to nirvana. He was referring to all of the spaces that the oneness of God. There were no Christians when he said what he said. Similarly, there were no Muslims when Muhammad pointed out what he pointed out. And there were no Buddhists when Lord Buddha lived. When Abraham died, there were no Jews. All of these prophets spoke to the same truth and the one God. And I believe by any name he is one. Just my opinion. So we have freedom to worship however we please. I believe that all the prophets were great, and they were all one, and they all learned the same laws, and the science of religion is the same. And I just believe that. So it's just my, you know, that's what I, but I wanted to say it because when Jesus Christ meant through Christ consciousness, he's right. But that's the same as the space that they all refer to. That thing that you, that I referred to in the book, Do You.
We'll circle back to that. Norman's calling from Roanoke, Virginia. Norman, you're on the air.
Yeah, hello, gentlemen. I don't necessarily want to pile on here, but I really appreciate Mr. Simmons' positiveness, you know, in his outlook on his philosophy and everything. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like there's some inability to face the reality that there are some things where there is nothing redeemable in them. They are totally corrupt, totally evil. Now, as far as hip hop goes, his comments about you know, mainstream hip hop, the stuff that gets airplay, I pretty much agree with that. But there are segments, just like in every aspect of life, there are segments of that genre or of life in general where there is nothing to be redeemed from. It's just totally garbage.
I agree that there's some things that are not useful in lifting people up and are not part of a process of promoting peacefulness in people, in, you know, or giving goodness in any way. I'm not recommending a company sign every record. I'm saying that they have to have some corporate responsibility, and each of us has to sign what inspires us. I was very proud of Public Enemy. I like what they said. I'm very proud of Run DMC. They were always very spiritual and religious, if you listen closely. And religious is, you know, a funny thing, but I liked their religion thing. You know, it was good. And I've supported lots of artists who said very, very inspiring things. Again, part of the problem, not describing the problem, but fixing the problem. Lots of artists. And I think that there were records that I would never have signed, and they came out. And those artists always need to be worked with and made better. And I was always there, even as an outsider. Today, I don't have a record company. The artists I have immediately signed on and said, he doesn't want to curse with any of his. I have one artist signed to Def Jam.
Are you ducking responsibility for the dark side, though, of hip hop, which our last two callers have both
kind of spoken
to? My job
as an insider is to take whatever I can and make it light, to do as much as I can to make it light, to inspire, to educate, to lift up artists. Some of the most gangsters become the greatest enablers for change. My job is not to protect anyone or to say that there's... my job is not to tell you that they're saying the right thing. My job is to make them see more so they can say more. I believe in light. I believe in promoting light. And I wish, again, that every rapper could only say sweet spiritual things. But then again, I want them to say what's in their heart, and I want the truth to come out as well. There's lots of truth that needs to be told. And lots of times I'm very proud when they say it.
Let's go to your city,
so
New York City.
I'm not trying to duck responsibility. Okay. I appreciate what you're saying.
Robert, in New York City, you're on the air with Russell Simmons.
Yes, Mr. Simmons, I'm starting to learn a lot more about you, and you're clearing up a lot of things that you've done in the past. I wanted to ask you a question. When you produced the Def Comedy Jam, were you aware, did you think about, you know, the word, the N-word, how it was used during those programs and the repercussions that we were going to have from it later on?
Because it was used a lot.
The N-word used a lot. Martin Lawrence and Chris Tucker and Jamie Foxx and Bernie Mac and, God, there's so many guys who became major American stars as a result of that show. That was a great experience, and I really enjoyed it. I think the N-word, the way the comedians use it, I don't remember any time where they used it just out of a clear blue and it was a demeaning term. In other words, it always was in context. It meant whatever they use it to mean. Language is a funny thing. The semantics of the words, you know, are, and again, that's paid for television. I think those poets, those comedians who use those words have a right to use them, and I defend their rights to use them. I just don't want them on mainstream television and radio. So their effect on the people is, you can argue it, that it is not. There's a magazine called Bitch Magazine. This magazine is run by some feminists, and the publisher said this: an insult hurled so much at an insulted person becomes the sole property of that insulted person. Therefore, the word bitch is incorporated by us as the title of our magazine and is a term of empowerment. So the feminist magazine, Bitch, is about women's empowerment. That's what it is. And I'm sorry that, you know, people who are outside the culture may not understand. But they've taken that word, the N-word, and they've turned its meaning around, and they're not going to stop. So that's what they do with it. I'm sorry if you can't digest it, but that's what they do.
Let me get one more
and
call.
And I like the Def Comedy Jam, and I'm very proud. I'm taking the Def comedians next month to see the troops in Germany, and I'm very excited that they're doing it.
One more, Russell Simmons. Alita in Chesapeake, Virginia. Alita, you're on the air.
Hello. Tom.
Hi.
Hello, Mr. Simmons. Thank you for this outlet. I've been holding. I'm so nervous. I just want to say a couple of things and then ask a question if I could.
Yes.
One, I do want to say that I love Run's House and the positive impact on my 17-year-old daughter. It is a beacon of light. It really, really is. I also want to say that I love your life's journey, Mr. Simmons. You are correct. In 10 years, if a man hasn't learned anything, that he has not grown. He's living a dead life. So as you grow and you expound and you share your light with everyone, what you're learning, that's awesome. I have a...
Take us to it, Alita. Our time's growing really short here.
Okay.
You got a question?
Okay, yeah. The question was, I want to know if you considered doing a youth poetry show on, I believe it's P. Diddy that's coming out with the new youth channel. That was one. And I also wanted to say that regardless of all, we need to promote our women without compromise, because when you kill our women, you kill our culture. And I'd like you to speak to all of that. Thank you.
That's a lot. We've got a minute. Russell Simmons, what do you say to
Alita? I'd love to do the poetry thing for Puff. I just talked to Puff this morning. He didn't ask me, but that's a good idea, especially if I know we're doing another series of deaf poetry. We're doing it from a prison, and I don't know if we're going to do another one after that. If not, I'll just take the show to Puffy. I would love to. And secondly, about the women, the idea of taking bitches and hoes off the radio is to have black men make a statement, because 99% of the rappers are black men, making a statement to black women. And, you know, it may to some only be a baby step, but I think those words can come off mainstream radio. And I think they should agree and be excited to do it as a statement that they feel the pain of black women and all women. But I think it's very, very important that we make this move. I'm not in charge. I'm making a recommendation, and I want to support better dialogue, and I want to change this misogynistic, sexist, violent, homophobic world we live in. I want to do the best I can to get people to operate from love, but I can only operate in the space. I think that if Jesus Christ was alive today, he'd hang out with a bunch of rappers. People contradict themselves all day long. Mm. The rappers are telling some truth, and that's my opinion. A lot of people out there, seems to me this is not a hip-hop station. A lot of people out there don't really get the culture, but I just think if Jesus Christ, I'm going to repeat that, was alive today, he would hang out with the rappers.
Russell Simmons'
the
new
last
book.
Word, nobody can comment. They're like, damn, I want to call him
you,
up. So you curse get him right out.
Russell Simmons'
Thank
book
so
is
much.
Do You.
I
Thanks
love
for
you
being
and
with
I love
us.
Everybody listening, really.
This is On Point. Thanks for joining us.